How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for March the 5th, 2021. This is episode number 48. Our top stories today, we drive the freshly revealed Porsche Taycan Cross Turismo. We also drive the refreshed Chevy Bolt EV and the new EUV. And Volvo debuts the C40 Recharge. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EVs forum moderator and Inside EVs editor. Joining us today is Tom Malogny, Inside EVs editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge with Tom Malogny. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, available on all your usual podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from Out of Spec Studios. He also puts out the surprisingly scrumptious videos for the Inside EVs YouTube channel. Please subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. If you like the podcast, please leave us a rating or maybe even a review on whichever platform you catch us on. That helps others discover us and spread the word about EVs. Of course, if you're watching us on YouTube, we'd love a thumbs up there as well. Okay, so welcome, gentlemen of the panel and ladies and gentlemen of the audience. Let's kick it off by talking about what's charging up in our driveways this week. Tom, I understand you had a few days with the VW ID4. How did that go?
Yeah, it was great. It's not the first time I've driven the ID4. Kyle and I both have driven them already, but now Volkswagen's coming around and giving media loans. Before it was like a half a day quick drive. So now we're actually getting to spend some time in the vehicles. And I had one over the weekend. I was able to do 70 mile an hour highway range test. I was able to record a complete DC fast charge session, which actually is just up on Inside EVs today. The 70 mile an hour range test is going to take a few days. We'll have that up on the site next week. I'll give you a little advance notice. I actually was able to drive 230 miles at 70 miles an hour and had 2% state of charge, which was showing 4 miles of range. So we're going to call that one at 234 miles. Pretty good considering it was, I started out, it was in the high 30s here in New Jersey. And during the day, it got warmer. It was up in the mid 40s. But with an EPA range rating of 250 miles, you know, that's not bad. I tried to figure out what the fuel.gov highway range would be, because they'll list consumption figures for city driving cycle and highway cycle. They don't give you a range. They just give you the consumption figure. So doing my numbers, it looked like they were saying it should get 230 miles on the highway. And it nailed it in not great conditions. I'm sure if this was in the summer, we could add a few miles to that. So good on Volkswagen. I think that's pretty acceptable highway range rating, you know, especially in the winter here in New Jersey.
Yeah, another publication had one just recently, and they got 190 miles out of it, but they drove at like 75 miles an hour or something. So that's maybe, I don't know what the temperature was.
It was a lot colder as well. It was minus temperature. So 40 Fahrenheit is about 4 degrees Celsius. Still pretty cold for an EV, though.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it definitely was not ideal range, you know, and there's so many different, you're going to see a lot of people come up with rolling different numbers, and we never say they're wrong with 190 no. mile an hour range test. You can do 10 tests and get 10 different results depending on the topography, the temperature, all these, you know, different things. And, you know, most of the time on the highway, Kyle and I remain at 70 miles an hour for the vast majority of these drives. But that doesn't mean 100%. We have to make turns. We get off the highway. Right. Every now and then we'll run into a little bit of traffic. So for a couple of miles, I might be going 65 miles an hour. But then what I do is after it clears up, I drive 72, 73 miles an hour for a few miles to try to offset the fact that for a mile or two, I was going slightly slower. I mean, these are real world driving conditions that customers are going to experience. You know, nobody's going to be able to get on a road and just stay at a constant speed, you know, for 4 hours, unless you're, you know, I mean, in some areas you can, but most of your driving, that's just not realistic. So we try to There's me. You know, I tell you, I was having trouble. I tried to pull into one of these stations, and for some reason it wouldn't work. Maybe one of the people reading here or following here will be able to.
That's so strange.
Help me out with that.
There's a plug on the end of that cable. Like the cable's got a plug on.
Yeah.
So that's so weird.
You know, I mean, it's an electric car. That's an electric car charging station. But I couldn't get it to work. So maybe
try the one next to it. Go next door. Yeah.
I didn't do that. You know, I just figured, you know, it wasn't going to work, Martin. So I did that. And in any event, I tweeted that out. Martin pulled up something that I tweeted this week that just said, you know, this isn't working. Thoughts? And I think it's had like 80,000 impressions at this point. And you should see me getting flamed by the Twitter sphere of people saying, you know, idiot, buy a Tesla. What's wrong with you? Meanwhile, I own a Tesla. Right. It was kind of funny. But I really like the comments of the people who know me and were like, oh, Tom, this is great. Like, you know, they don't know, you know, that they're taking this serious. But in any event, it was a good weekend. We did the range test. DC fast charge test came out really well. As I said, that's up on the Inside EVs today. Volkswagen claims a 5% to 80% DC fast charge rate in 38 minutes. I plugged in at 2% and I hit 80% in 38 minutes. So it's actually slightly quicker. And I think I peaked at like 128 kilowatts and it held that all the way up to 30% where it starts ramping down at 50%. It was still pulling, I think 100 kilowatt. It was right under 100, maybe 95. I mean, the charging curve isn't terrible for this vehicle. I mean, you know, what I like to always look at as I do my 100-mile test, how fast can I add 100 miles of range if you plug in at a low state of charge? And the ID4 took 16 minutes to add 100 miles of range, plugged in at 2%. So, you know, on quite often on road trips, you don't need to fully recharge. If you've driven 200 miles, let's say, in 210 miles and you're low state of charge and you stop at a DC fast charger and you need to get to the rest of your destination, on many occasions, you don't need to fully recharge. You need to add 100 miles or so to get you to where you're going. And, you know, that in 16 minutes to be able to reclaim 100 miles is pretty good, in my opinion.
So when you did pull up to the Electrify America chargers, I believe that's who you used to do your fast charge test. How was that experience? Was it? I saw a video earlier this week. Some people have some issues with Electrify America. Was it how easy is that for you?
So when I did the Porsche Taycan DC fast charge test, if you remember, a couple of weeks ago we talked about it here. My initial plug-in didn't work well. I only was pulling 50 kilowatts, so I had to abandon the recording. You know, you get one shot to plug in with your camera set up and record the whole thing. If it doesn't work, you're done for the day. But this time it worked perfectly. I pulled up at 2%, set up the cameras, plugged in, and it immediately was charging at 120 kilowatts within like 15 seconds. It was up to, so I was like, yeah, okay, I got this one. I don't have to come back and reshoot it. I mean, it's a shame that you have to worry about that, but that is where we are still today. Kyle can talk to that as good as anybody can. But in this instance, it was fine. I rolled up, plugged in, and she worked perfectly. One of the things I want to add, Dom, is sure. One of the things that is frustrating to me, though, is that the ID4 does not have plug and charge technology. For crying out loud, it's Volkswagen. All right. Right. You know, they own Electrify America. There shouldn't be another Volkswagen product from any of their brands that launches without plug and charge technology, period.
Preach.
Anything less than that, in my opinion, is unacceptable. And it didn't launch with it, which is, you know, I had to pull out my, I mean, it took me 5 seconds. Okay. I pulled out my app, swipe start, and it was charging. So, okay. But that's not the point. The point is we're trying to move the needle here. The industry is trying to make this easier, and Volkswagen owns Electrify America. They should be the first ones. They should be the role model, and they're obviously not.
Right. See, so Tony S in YouTube asked, rumors that the ID4 all-wheel drive Pro in the US will come from Chattanooga, not from Germany. Any info or not? I don't know myself specifically that trim level, but I do know, you know, that they do want all the ID4s sold in the US to be built in the US. So, but that Chattanooga plant is not up yet. So we are getting our first ID4s from Germany, right?
Yep, that's correct.
All right. Hey, Kyle. So among other things, I saw on the Out of Spec TikTok that you picked up a Ford Mustang Mach-E first edition this week in Grabber Blue.
Yes, so, it's sitting just on the other side of this computer in the driveway.
So I believe we've talked about this car before, but I understand that you're going to have it for a while and that you're looking for some suggestions for videos, both like short, like TikTok length and otherwise. So tell us what you think about this spec and what's up with this project, and maybe our viewers can send you some suggestions.
Yeah, so, well, I'll explain first how we got this car. We basically, Dave Anderson, who ran the Pikes Peak, or I should say donated the car for the Model 3 Pikes Peak effort, has become a good friend since then. And we were talking, we said, you know, look, Dave, you know, he has a YouTube channel that he's starting to grow and talk about EVs. I'm like, look, your name's EV Dave, not Tesla Dave. You have like 12 Teslas in the driveway. Buy something else. And so he's like, okay, well, what do you want to get? And I'm like, all right, well, I think there's probably, in terms of numbers, the most interest in the Mustang Mach-E. And he's like, okay, well, I'll buy it. You take it for weeks, months, however long, and then bring it back to North Carolina, and we'll kind of swap it around. We'll just make content with it. So we bought this together just for content generation. And it'll be across our channels, Inside EVs, and his. And Mustang Mach-E first edition. The hard part about this car is you had to be one of the first reservation holders to get a first edition. We didn't put a reservation in. I put a reservation in for a GT a long time ago, not a first edition. So this showed up at a dealer. The person who ordered it couldn't actually take delivery, unfortunately, was going blind. And so they were able to list it for sale. And because this was a canceled order, it didn't go under the mandatory 4,000 demo miles before they can sell it. So we bought it with like 30 miles on it or something like this, and worked out well. Now, our local dealer here in Colorado had the same thing happen. Someone ordered two by accident, and two came in, and I said, great, we'll just buy it from you. And, you know, we're happy to pay sticker for it, and all is great. And then they said, you know, good, we were going through the process. And then at the last second, they're like, oh, we're going to charge you $5,000 over sticker. And I'm like, well, I'm going to go drive 3 hours, buy one with a $100 discount and no dealer fees. So that's what happened. We have plenty of videos we're going to make. We know, you know, probably at least 15 videos on this car that will run range tests, charging tests, races against Model Y. We're going to do ID4 versus Mustang Mach-E versus Model Y versus, I think, XC40 Recharge as well here next weekend. So that'll be really neat. Lots of good stuff going on for sure. And really looking forward to testing this car out some. We've put about 500 miles on it in the last 3 days.
Right on. That sounds pretty interesting. So yeah, if you have any ideas, what you'd like to see, Ford Mustang do, somebody actually just drove one across the country from like California, right across down the I-10, which, you know, goes from East Coast to West Coast, right by my house, actually. The I-10's right in front of me. Ford's very happy about that. I guess I don't think they had any problems. They just, you know, drove it, plugged it in, charged and went. So that's great.
I will say same exact spec as our car here, but that's our car that we're looking at. Never mind.
Yeah.
We had charging issues with this. Our first stop on the way home took four different sessions to get it to charge up, and different problem each time. Nothing consistent. And also I brought it over to our Porsche dealer here. I let the guys drive it for a day while I was out filming some other vehicles, and they had problems charging it on their DC charger. Like half the time it works and half the time it doesn't. Totally different hardware, software. So I think it might be on the car side. We'll have to play around with it.
Maybe it's the car, individual car issue itself then.
Maybe, or maybe it's just the software of all Mustang Mach-Es. I don't know. Very weird.
So I tried to slide that reference to your TikTok channel in there, real kind of smooth. But I did want to mention that if you are a TikTok person, go subscribe to Out of Spec on TikTok, and hopefully next week we'll also have an Inside EVs TikTok channel, and we're going to try to stream this show on that platform as well. And also this week we are streaming live on Twitch. So if you're like a gamer and just, you know, you're really happy with the Twitch platform and you're there a lot, you know, check us out there as well. And I just tuned in over on my laptop here, and we're there as well.
Are we working today? Is it on?
It is. It's like awesome.
Oh,
that's very exciting for me. I don't know.
Anyway. We're looking dangerously competent some days. I mean, don't rule out the ability for us to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory at any moment. But this is good. This is good. All right.
somebody mentions a lift back race. Which hat's back opens and closes the fastest to get dogs in and out? So
this is important. It's very important. I will tell you instantly off the bat, any Toyota product I've noticed just from testing cars have the slowest tailgates ever. Every single one, without fail.
Okay. So, all right. So both Kyle and Tom have had the chance to spend a bit of time with the newly refreshed Chevy Bolt EUV and Chevy Bolt EV and the new EUV. We talked about these cars when they debuted a couple weeks ago. But basically, the Bolt EV has significant changes to the styling interior, but still has the same powertrain as before. And it also has $5,000 off the MSRP. And the Bolt EUV that shares that same powertrain and the updated interior, but with more legroom in the back, more standard equipment and options, including a non-lane changing version of Super Cruise, I believe. Oh, and roof rails on the EUV. So, Tom, we couldn't talk about this last week because it was embargoed, but now we can. So can you tell us what you thought of the changes to the EV and the new EUV? Maybe start with the exteriors and then move inside, but maybe leave the running lights in the back to Kyle.
Okay, yeah. So I think the exterior is absolutely an improvement. The nose on the Bolt EV, while I never disliked it, it definitely is cleaner now, definitely looks a lot nicer. Now, I want to be clear, we didn't get a chance to drive the Bolt EV. I don't know if Kyle did. I didn't. Only the EUV. They had an EV there for us to look at, but it wasn't, at least the media drive we had in New Jersey, was it wasn't cleared. It didn't have the right insurance or whatever. It was just a certain production build where we were not allowed to drive the EV. This was an EUV media drive. Okay. So the interior, the exterior, the Bolt EUV looks a lot more masculine in my opinion. Even though neither vehicle is an extraordinarily masculine car, but the rear hatch, the way the rear glass, is more of an angle on the EUV and it looks wider. It just looks beefier in the back than the Bolt, EV does. And, the vehicles don't share any exterior sheet metal. They're completely different. Even though their dimensions are nearly identical, the EUV is 6 inches longer than the EV, but the width and the height are nearly identical. Pretty much all the specs are identical. The interior looked to me exactly the same. Although I only briefly looked in the EV, maybe Kyle spent some more time with that, but I think it's the exact same interior. I don't think there's any differences. Right. And on the EUV, you get the option of the glass moonroof, as you could see there. But that is an option, and you get the option to have Super Cruise if you want to pay. I think it was a $2,000 option. And as Dominic mentioned, it doesn't have the lane changing features that the Cadillac version of Super Cruise does. But the from what I used, it worked pretty well. I think Kyle's going to probably talk about that a little bit more. He used it a little more than I did. The one thing that was that's the rear seats.
Look at that legroom, man.
Yeah, it's that's where you get where the 6 inches go. You have a little bit more than I think 3 inches. See there, I hop into a Bolt and I did set the seats to the same position. I went and sat in the front. So it was how I would drive the car. The rear seating area, that's where you get the value on the Bolt EUV is the rear seating area. Another thing that was interesting that a lot of people pointed out on Inside EVs, and now we're back here by the hatch, was that the Bolt EV actually has slightly less listed cargo space as the Bolt EV does. And it just doesn't make sense. If you look at it, if you see it's 6 inches longer. And the GM engineer explained to me that the way the SAE requires them to measure the cargo space is the height of the rear cargo area has to be measured directly over the rear axle. And in the EUV, the roof slopes down more aggressively. So you can see that we might have mentioned that last time. I'm not sure. The roof slopes down a lot more aggressively. So there is a lack actually more space in the EUV than the EV, even though the actual dimensions listed show that the EV has slightly more cargo space, if that makes any sense. GM engineer, he told me we measured it every different way. We put things in here. It fits. It can fit a lot more cargo space, but unfortunately, the official dimensions show that the EV is slightly bigger. It drove great. Look, it's a value play. I have torn mixed emotions about these vehicles because they didn't move the needle at all. That's clear. You know, the GM didn't. It's not like, oh wow, look at what GM brought out. They improved the Bolt. It's a better Bolt, and then they offered this other vehicle that is a little bit better. Okay, it's bigger. It has more versatility for families. It has more options, and they did all that while taking $5,000 off the cost of the Bolt. Now, they did that on paper because they were giving you the $5,000 anyway. For right. the last 2 years or year and a half, GM had an $8,500 factory to dealer incentive on Bolts. So if they don't extend, if they don't have an additional factory to dealer incentive around $3,000 or $3,500, they actually raised the price.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's see what happens here.
Right.
I hope that they continue to put some kind of cash on the hood for families, because this can be the Bolt EUV can actually work well for families that don't have enough money to go out and spend $45,000, $50,000 on, say, you know, a well-equipped ID4 or Mustang Mach-E. It's a value play. And if they continue to put some cash on the hood so families can get in this vehicle for a decent lease price, then I think it has a place there. But other than that, you know, it's an improved Bolt, which is good. Improve. Kyle will probably kill him on the DC fast charge rate, which I think is terrible that they didn't raise it, but they didn't raise it. And the EUV should have been available in all, should have been an all-wheel drive option. That said, it's not a bad package.
I feel like they would have had to raise the price because that would have required a lot more engineering.
You're probably right. Drive. Yeah. It's just those types of vehicles, these small crossovers, these, you know, and then they go and call it an EUV, like we need another acronym, you know. But those types of vehicles, families are looking for them in all-wheel drive, even if they don't sure. need the all-wheel drive. If you put really good snow tires on a good front-wheel drive car, you can get through almost anything.
Or rear-wheel drive. In front-wheel drive, traditionally, yeah. you have, like, the motor over the front wheel, so that gives it the weight and the traction. But with an EV, it's the weight distribution is, like, pretty flat. So I think front-back wheel drive, it doesn't really matter right. in the snow so much.
But tires are
– tires are
– uber important.
Everything.
Good winter tires on a car with a two-wheel drive car, you can get through nearly anything.
Yeah. Tom, didn't you say in your video that every exterior panel is different on both cars? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I just mentioned that also doesn't share any of the exterior features. They're completely different, which is interesting that, you know, GM didn't try to save some money by using the same quarter panel or something. They're completely different vehicles. And they're so similar. You put them next to each other and, you know, the size is, I was trying to park them so I could take pictures, but like, you almost can't tell the difference, even though it is longer.
Right.
You know, they're so similar in size.
But is that just not like washing your car and then throwing the bucket of dirty water over it again? It's like, if you're going to make a new car, were they not tempted to, if they've gone to the bother of designing every exterior panel different to the other car, did no one go, should we make it look a little bit different? Yeah. Boys, nah, make it look, put all the work in, but it'll look exactly the same, but a little bit longer.
And yeah. add one letter
yeah.
to the name. Like,
it seems weird. It seems so yeah, weird.
It is a little weird to me too. I want to like the car because it can be a good value play for families that want to go electric, you know, especially if we get the tax credit reinitiated, under this, the green deal that's being proposed, and GM yeah. gets their $7,000 tax credit back, now it becomes an extremely good you know play for families. Here in New Jersey, we get $5,000. You know, you're talking low 20s if the federal tax credit gets reinstated, that will move the needle. That will put families that can't afford a $35,000-$40,000 car in a long range, 250 miles is long range, I consider, electric vehicle. So that can make a difference. Now let Kyle poo-poo on it.
So Kyle, you made a TikTok about the Bolt EV and I think broke the news and maybe a few hearts about the disappointing new taillights. on the car. So tell us about that. But first, maybe give us some quick impressions about your opinion of the updates.
Yeah, so I flew to Detroit for the day just to drive this thing. And, you know, look, I people really seem to think that I hate this car. I don't hate the car. No. I just I really think GM put the least amount of effort into improving a product ever. They went through and made it look different, but not any better. So what they should have done was made it look the same, put like a blue line on it to indicate a change, and then take all the money they spent redesigning it and made it charge faster and more efficient and blah, blah, blah. Put it into the stuff that people who are buying Bolts want to see, which is an improvement in their daily living. You don't buy a Bolt because it looks good or bad. You buy a Bolt because it makes sense on paper. And this car does make sense on paper. When you look at the cost, you know, it's just like Tom said, you know, no need to reiterate. I was highly critical of the car on certain points, and I awarded it points where needed. GM has had years of complaints from owners of terrible seats, right? They went through the trouble of redesigning the seats, but they have not made them any better. One of my commenters pointed out they put a lumbar support in there. Honestly, right. I forgot there wasn't even a lumbar support in the Bolt. It's been a little while since I had driven one, but I was like uncomfortable after my 2 hours in it. And here's the thing. You get a Bolt EUV with all this extra space so you can put people in it. They're running ads of you driving it across the country, going to Disney, doing whatever. And then they put Super Cruise in there. And now it's, oh, by the way, it's going to take an hour and a half to charge. Like, that's insane to me. So I think it makes sense as an around town car. And if you're getting an around town car, I'd rather see them put an even smaller battery in it and just make like a city version. So it's just a very confusing, mind warping vehicle to me. The Bolt EV I was most impressed with. I really like the new styling changes, if there are going to be any. I got to spend all time with that car. I made a whole video on the Bolt EV and the EUV. Both are on the Out of Spec Reviews YouTube channel. And the thing with the Bolt EV is they've taken out all of the premium options. So you can't get the camera, rearview mirror, and some other things. And then they've changed the styling a bit. And no longer can you get a premier trim of the regular Bolt. If you want a nice one, you have to get the EUV, which is only 0.2 inches taller and 0.2 inches wider. It is 6.3 inches longer, but only 3 inches of that goes to legroom. The rest, I think, is in the hood, if I remember correctly. So you're not getting a measurably larger vehicle. I mean, you get out of one and into the other, and you know what? It certainly back to back, they feel a little different, but if you live with it every day, it's not going to make or break anything. So I wish they didn't create a submodel. I don't understand the EUV's need. I wish they just made the Bolt better or canceled the Bolt EV and made the EUV. Super Cruise was great, though. Had a zero disengagements, no problems with it.
Nice.
I've heard of reports of other journalists that had terrible problems with Super Cruise on their drives. Okay. None with mine, and I have a whole video going up on the Super Cruise light version in the Bolt on Inside EVs today or tomorrow.
Last week when you were out driving, Kyle, and we had Sean on, who was brilliant, and
Sean Mitchell,
who was excellent, very insightful. If you haven't seen that show yet, we were talking about the Bolt and whether it's still in the lineup as a budget car that they know how to make, they're tooled to make, they've got all the parts and the supply chains, and then if the government go ahead with this, you know, EV federal fleet kind of thing, and somebody just wants to buy 50,000 vehicles to, I don't know, for park rangers and stuff like that. Can you see that they've kept the Bolt on the market simply to be a no frills, like cheap as like possibly we can make it kind of car?
Oh, 100%. That's the whole goal. I mean, it's really meant for fleet use, or if you just don't like something about the EUV. If you're a general consumer, you're just going to buy an EUV. No question, right? So the EV is there for fleets. Like my whole town has a fleet of Bolts here. They have probably 30 of them, and they use them for parking enforcement. They have Leafs and Bolts for that. They use them for code enforcement, a whole bunch of stuff. Everyone drives EVs in this town, and they're all Chevy, not one Tesla. And that's just because Chevy has such a strong fleet sales business.
Right. Hey, so tell us about these taillights. What's the deal with that?
Yeah, so the taillights in the previous Bolt are normal. You have two big lights in the back of the car that light up when you hit the brakes, as you would expect. However, that no longer happens on the new Bolt EV or EUV. You can actually watch my driving impressions video I put up yesterday of when I first noticed this happen. You can see my general, my extreme shock and horror at this.
Right.
And they put the taillights and the turn signals in the little things in the bumper. And okay, so here's the reason as to why I asked an engineer. They said they had to make stylistic changes to the daytime running lights or nighttime running lights that forced them to not be able to include the DOT approved brake light and turn signal in the rear. And to me, that just seems like a half-assed effort. Yes. So you could tell the engineer wasn't happy about it, but they had to come up with a solution, which is to put them in the bumper. Now, the previous Bolt has turn signal and brake light capability in the bumper itself. The reason being, for FMVSS, you can't have a brake light that ever is not showing the back of the road, basically showing the car behind you, even if the lift back, the tailgate is open. So what in the previous Bolt, it would switch from the main light. As soon as the hatch would unlock, it would go down to the lights in the bumper. Now they have just put the lights in the bumper full time. It looks so stupid during the day, like unbelievably stupid. And the only other car I've been able to come up with that does this was the pre-refresh Mini Clubman, like a 2018 to 20, before they did the refresh of that car, which then they moved the taillights back into the correct position.
I just feel like this is like a safety issue. Like this, they're less visible down there. People don't expect, you know, they see big lights and nothing happening. I mean, if you're,
it's a giant car in front of you, and most, you know, you're going to notice that it's, you're still coming up on it. You can see the brake lights visually. It adheres and conforms to our standards. So I don't think it's a safety issue. I think it's just a visual annoyance. If anything, you're going to notice it more because you're like, why the hell are the brake lights down there and not where they should be?
Yeah. Okay.
So really quick, Joshua Black asked, what's the size difference between a Bolt EUV and an Equinox? A lot. I don't have the dimensions in front of me, Joshua, but it's got to be at least a foot longer. I owned an Equinox for 7 or 8 years, and they're not comparable vehicles, honestly. It's the EUV is much smaller than an Equinox. It's more like a Chevy Trax.
It's just a good car. It doesn't excel in any category, and its only true weakness is the DC fast charging curve. Not the curve, but the peak speeds. And honestly, if you're buying one, you could probably find in just 6 months or so a used ID4, used Mustang Mach-E, used Jag I-Pace for around the same price with a CPO extended warranty.
If you're looking for an Equinox size vehicle, I think GM will cover that in their new Ultium range of vehicles coming up over the next few years. So, you know, I guess keep on looking for that. But
can I share a funny story real quick about the GM engineer? So I was talking to one of the guys, really, really nice guy. I won't say who it was, obviously. And we're talking about the future of GM's EV plans. And I said, look, is GM's plan to focus at all on efficiency, or are you just going to stuff big ass batteries into these things and make them go? And he just laughed. So that's the future plan.
Well, that seems to be the plan of all the legacy automakers. You know, that none of them are really drilling down on making the vehicles as efficient as possible. It's kind of like they either don't get it, or they're like, it's just too hard to do that. So we're just going to, you know, use the big hammer to deal with this problem. And then one last thing I want to add, Dom, since Kyle was talking about Super Cruise and he didn't have any issues with it. The funny thing is, our press drive, we drove about 45 miles one way. We stopped for like coffee and whatever, and then drove back. When the media event started, we were told masks at all times during this entire day, where you have to wear your mask. So I left my mask on when I was driving my Bolt EUV to the midway point of our drive, and I couldn't get Super Cruise to stay on. It just kept dropping off every minute. It was just, you know, so we get to the 50% mark and we get out, you know, there's the engineers there to talk to us. And I was like, this sucks. I said, this thing doesn't work, man. You know, I couldn't get it to stay on for like a minute. And he's looking at me and I have my mask on. He's like, did you have that on while you were driving? And I'm like, yeah, because I was told I have to leave this on at all times today. He's like, okay, on the way back, take it off. He said the camera that is reading like your facial. He said, you basically – you tricked the camera. The camera couldn't understand if you were being attentive or not. And you know, the GM Super Cruise, unlike Tesla, that just has the torque sensor on the steering wheel, it has a little camera on the steering wheel that, right, that monitors you to make sure you're not falling asleep, you're paying attention, you're not. And I tested it out when I took the mask off. Like, I would look at the, go like this to look at the radio, even though I had my eyes on the road, and I could fake it to think that, you know, I wasn't paying attention, and it would start blinking, telling me it was going to shut off. But the, my mask completely freaked it out. It couldn't tell if I was being attentive or not. So that's one thing that's interesting about the Super Cruise.
Well, that's the
reason that Super Cruise doesn't do lane changes, because I can already feel the comments coming after this video goes live. The reason that Chevy's version of Super Cruise doesn't do lane changes has nothing to do with the brand distinction between Chevy and Cadillac. It is just the architecture is a old style architecture in the Bolt that they adapted it for. It's the A something. And then the new ones can support, and they have all the extra sensors needed for lane changes. But yeah, Super Cruise is great. I would say that the biggest downside to me, though, is it's forced to work on pre-mapped highways. And to me, that always sounded like a good idea until I was on the drive and I was like, oh, let me get my camera set up and everything. Let me just put the system on. And I'm on back roads and it wouldn't activate. Meanwhile, Ford's Copilot 360 works and Autopilot works everywhere.
Right. And another thing I noticed about it, Kyle, was when we're driving down the highway, if we approached an area where the highway split, it immediately canceled. It cancels because it doesn't want to deal with like changing, you know, the lane splitting. So, you know, I was actually
its lane.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but if, and it does it a distance ahead of time. So at first I'm like, what's going on here? This thing still doesn't work. And then, like, you know, a half a mile later or a mile later, we get to a point where I see the lane, the highway splits. I'm like, ah, that's why. Then we get out onto the highway a mile in and the icon comes on that says you can use Super Cruise again. It doesn't want to deal with difficult things, which, good if it can't deal with those. It's better to disengage than to try to deal with them.
True. You know, I totally agree. Customers push these systems way too far. It gets dangerous. I think GM's approach of just, you need to drive here. I get that approach. The other thing is this Super Cruise suffers from a bad case of truck lust, which is when you're driving down the highway and you see a truck, most single camera ADAS systems tend to go near the truck. And so you end up really hugging the trucks. And then at the end, it pushes away. And the Mustang suffers from it too. And AP1 Teslas do to an extent as well. So no different here.
All right. Hey, so let's move on to the news of the week. And the big story here is the debut of the Porsche Taycan Cross Turismo. I think we can agree for the most part. This is basically the dual motor, big 93.4 kilowatt hour battery version of the Porsche Taycan that we've known to come to know and love. It comes in four trims to start with. Going from basic to blingier, we have the Taycan 4 Cross Turismo, the Taycan 4S Cross Turismo, the Taycan Turbo Cross Turismo, and the Taycan Turbo S Cross Turismo. The biggest difference is between this and the Taycan sedan, of course, is that it's a station wagon, which makes for an additional 9 millimeters or 0.35 inches of headroom for people in the front seats, and 3.62 inches or 92 millimeters. That's a lot. For more headroom for people in the back, which should make it a lot more comfortable for taller people back there. I thought it was fine, but you know, it's good. It's more than fine now, I think. Of course, this also means a back hatch and more cargo space, 15.7 cubic feet for the lower two trims, 14.3 cubic feet for the two turbo trims. Fold those rear seats down and that improves to 42.8 cubic feet, which is pretty good for it's, you know, it's a station wagon, not a crossover or an SUV. It could also be considered a soft roader, meaning that it can tackle some of the rougher dirt roads and such. It sits 20 millimeters higher than the Taycan sedan, but you can also raise it up an additional 10 millimeters in gravel mode and even higher in lift mode. It's not always a high rider, though. In range or in sport plus mode, the suspension drops from the normal setting to 22 millimeters lower. So it's right in there where the Taycan sedan sits at normally when that's not in range or sport plus mode. So yes, the Taycan, right. So let's look at, if you want to look at some range and power numbers, I'll just do a couple real quick. The 4 Cross Turismo, the entry level one, is 375 horsepower. Has an overboost. It puts up to 469 horsepower. And acceleration is 0 to 62 miles an hour, 0 to 100 kilometers an hour in 5.1 seconds. So that's not incredibly quick, but that's the lower trim. And the range and WLTP, we don't have EPA ranges now yet, but the range for the Ford Cross Turismo is 240. They give a range of ranges, 242 miles to 283 miles, which is, you know, that's pretty far. And so if we look at the Taycan Turbo S Cross Turismo, that's the very top of the range, very top trim level. That has 617 horsepower, which is also the same amount of horsepower as the other turbo trim level just below it, until you hit the overboost. With the overboost, it gets more. It gets 751 horsepower, which is a lot, and it brings the acceleration to 2.9 seconds, 0 to 100 kilometers an hour. So that's probably going to be like 2.7 seconds, 0 to 60. And, of course, Porsche tends to be very conservative with these numbers, so it's probably quicker. So that's a lot of numbers, Tom. But you wrote up this for Inside EVs. Can you tell us about any other features that make this special?
Well, first I want to point out that Pete Bremme just posted, sorry, this Porsche just doesn't do it for me in just one look. Dom, is there any way we could put some of our followers in like podcast jail and maybe block him from the channel for 24 hours?
He was such a good guy until this moment.
Because it's obvious Mr. Bremme doesn't have any taste in vehicles. And
that is true.
Poor Pete. No, leave Pete alone.
Yeah.
You're friends with Pete, actually.
He is Tom's neighbor.
It's funny, Pete's quick story on Pete. When I first met Pete, he was talking about how Teslas were so ugly and he'd never get a Model 3. And, you know, it looks like a fish, the front of it and everything. So we went for a drive in my Model 3 and he ordered one like a month later. And now he's like, Teslas are the best.
So now you just have to get him in the Taycan Cross
Turismo.
That's
the thing. That's the thing. So hopefully we're going to get a loan of the Cross Turismo. I just had the 4S. I don't know. Kyle scored a damn Cross Turismo before anybody in the country. This guy was driving the Cross Turismo, which is ridiculous. So very rarely am I jealous of like my coworkers, but I was super jealous of this one. I love this vehicle. I wrote in the article that it's you know, every now and then a car like creeps up on me. I know it's out there, but I don't really pay much attention to it. And then when I see it, I'm like, oh my God. And everybody knows I love the Taycans. I've driven them. I absolutely, you know, if money was no object, I'd own a Taycan now. But now if money was no object, I'd own this Taycan. And actually, it's a great play. It's a great value. You get, if a $100,000 car can ever be a great value. But if you compare it to the other Taycans, the base 4 version, it has the Performance Plus battery, which you have to pay like $6,500 for if you get the base Taycan. It has the all-wheel drive. It's got the extra front motor. And if you if you equip the comparably to the base Taycan now with the 4 Cross Turismo, the delta in the price difference is only $1,500. And for that, you get the front motor because the base Taycan is only rear-wheel drive. You get all-wheel drive. And you get all that extra space. I just fooling around spec'd one at $96,000. I would love it. And $7,500 federal tax credit down in the high 80s. It's still out of my price range. But I love this vehicle, and I think Porsche is going to sell them. I think I'm totally in love with it. But
I was surprised. I put out before this broke, but we had seen the pre-production version of it. I put out a little poll on Twitter, which is very scientific, I know. But I was surprised that, you know, more people like the sedan version than this.
Our audience is just wrong.
Well, the other version, it had some cladding on it too, so it didn't quite look like it didn't look as good as this does. So I want to try to run that poll again and just see if there's any changes. But I still was kind of shocked because I think this looks pretty good. I do like the sedan, and I like the practicality that this offers, and it's still just as good looking to me. Anyway,
totally agree.
Anything else about it you want to mention? What's this lift mode like?
Yeah, the interesting, the lift mode, it's, you know, and Porsche, I spoke to Porsche about the vehicle. It's really, it's not meant to be like a true off-roader. It's meant, you know, to gravel roads. And, you know, a lot of people that might be Porsche buyers might have, you know, winter or summer homes that are in rural areas that they need to drive on long dirt roads. And the vehicle is more suited for that. And the lift mode actually lifts the vehicle up. They didn't give us the specifications on lift mode, exactly how high it does, but it's only
to its highest suspension setting,
the highest suspension setting. And it's only for, while you're driving very slowly. It's meant to like go over if you see an obstacle in the road or a rock or, you know, a very uneven road.
Interesting. In this video, in the Out of Spec Reviews video I did, I had it in gravel mode and I was full on drifty at high speed.
That's gravel mode, Kyle. I'm talking about lift mode. It's different.
Oh, the one I drove didn't have lift mode. Sorry.
Yeah. It's gravel mode lift. Gravel mode lifts the car 10 millimeters, an additional 10 millimeters.
That is its highest natural.
That's its highest natural. But then there's another setting called lift. And I don't know if they call it lift mode or just lift. But it lifts the vehicle even higher, Kyle. Maybe it wasn't set up in your software yet, because I know you had a pre-production vehicle. And it lifts it even higher, but it's only for very low speed driving. I got the impression that it was like well under 10 miles an hour. It's just meant if there's a big rock or something in the road, it lifts the car even higher. And it as soon as you start driving a little bit quicker, it assumes, okay, you're beyond the obstacle, and then it drops it back down to the – you don't have to – you turn it off, it immediately comes out of lift mode.
Should call it rock crawling mode.
Yeah, well, I guess they don't want to make it sound too capable, because like Porsche reminded me, this isn't, you know, this isn't our response to the Hummer EV, you know? It's made for, you know, loose gravel roads and so forth. And if you notice, along the bottom, there's, I forget the name of it now, I have terrible memory, off-road kit or
off-road, do you remember? Design package.
The design package, yeah. That's all plastic along the bottom, and it's made so that you don't get rock chips and so forth, and in a couple of years, the bottom of your vehicle isn't, you know, starting to rust out. And I think it looks cool. You could order it in a couple different styles. And I think it definitely adds. And also up on the top, you'll see there's roof rails.
Yes.
So in Europe, the vehicle is going to come standard with an aluminum roof. And the panoramic glass roof is going to be an option. But here in the U.S., we're not going to get the aluminum roof. We're only getting the panoramic glass roof, and the roof rails can only be ordered with the panoramic glass roof. They can be added later, but you can only get them with the panoramic glass roof. So for our viewers over in Europe, if you think in the future at some point you're going to want to put the roof rails on because you're going to want to throw a box up there, you have to order the vehicle with the panoramic roof. If you order it with the aluminum roof, that's, you're not going to be able to add the roof rails.
That's a great point. So also the bike racks, can you tell us anything about that?
No. Honestly, no. I know it's going to be optional. They're going to even make one, but and they're making e-bikes too to kind of complement.
Right. I was going to bring that up.
I honestly didn't do a deep dive, and I just kind of added that towards the end when it came out with the press package. But I know it's going to be optional. They're going to have that availability.
So it looks like it has like a trailer hitch kind of bike rack built into it somehow. So I don't know if it's going to be able to tow. I haven't seen anything about towing yet, but you can, at least there'll be some sort of option to put on a bike rack, which is great. And there, if you look at the press photos, those are Porsche brand bicycles on the back, electric bicycles, and they're sweet. One's a road bike, one's an off-road bike. And I really want to get my hands on those just as much actually as the Taycan. I think I can have a lot more fun on a bicycle than I just like being out in the woods and ripping through. Oh man, it's going to be great. Okay. So Kyle, you actually drove this car ahead of the launch, as we said, or at least a pre-production version of it. So as the Cannonball record holder in a Taycan sedan, you're pretty familiar behind the wheel and I assume even the back seat. So can you tell us a bit about your driving experience and why you think it's the better Taycan probably?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, you buy the one you want. I'm not going to convince you to buy a wagon over a sedan, other than do you want to have a pleasant experience when you look at it, and do you want to be cool? You know, those are two things. Look, this is the Cross Turismo version of the Taycan, which is the off-roady, gravelly, loose surface version. in other models, such as Panamera, there's something called the Sport Turismo, which is not the off-roady stuff, but still the wagon. Right. And I would spec my Cross Turismo to be as sporty as possible without the off-roady stuff. And you can actually get it so that you don't have all that plastic stuff down there, and it looks a little classier, I think. I spec'd my Ultimate one at 178. It was a turbo, non-S. And then I think Tom came in with a much more reasonable number because he's a sane individual at under 100 for the optimal spec, I think, is where you came in. So the configurator launched yesterday, which meant I had to push all my meetings to today because I spent all day ticking all the Porsche options, as I do when any new Porsche model comes out. And look, I was very lucky to drive this car. I haven't been able to speak about it on the podcast yet. I think we made one allusion to driving it. But yeah, literally it flew into California. I was the only one to drive it. Went to Detroit, car and driver had it. Then it went to Norway. And really, really cool experience. We, you know, just timing worked out right after the Cannonball. Porsche was super excited. They really have become good friends over there. And they said, look, just, you know, we had planned this before the drive. We knew we were going to do this. So we hung out in LA for a couple of days, filmed some stuff, and then went over to drive this. Honestly, it's the same exact car underneath as Taycan. There's no perceptible difference driving it. All of the same qualities that come with normal Taycan are here. This is a little bit softer and more compliant over bumps, I would say. But the one I drove was a maxed out rear steer, just shredded up a canyon road. If you watch some of our videos, you can see how quickly it changes direction. Yeah. I mean, it's really, truly an insane physics-defying machine. And by far my favorite electric car on the market. So I think it really depends on spec with how good this looks. I think their launch spec in Mamba green and white with that black cladding just didn't really work for me. I would do mine in like a deep forest green, like Shmi with the gold wheels, and like make it kind of nice. And I would do the Shmi style on this. Yeah, really, really awesome car. No complaints. I am sure the range will be higher than rated, but I'm sure it won't exceed it as far as the sedan because it's less aerodynamic. Yeah, if I ever win the lottery, you know, I'm going out and buying a Taycan Turbo Cross Turismo because I don't want the power charge port doors.
Okay. What? Really?
Yeah, because they do two things. One, they get annoying every time you have to plug in, they're opening and closing. And secondly, you lose an air vent that helps with brake cooling. So your brakes overheat more quickly.
Okay. Hmm. Interesting. And
less aero.
There is that one like little section of your video of you going around a turn from the back in the Cross Turismo. It's like magic. It's like the way it goes around that turn. It's almost like the video sped up. It's like, what?
Yeah, it wasn't sped up. I was just really driving the piss out of it. But that's how you got to test a car.
And this was a long time ago, right? This was like because often say things after
we
the
had
podcast.
To like.
You know, if we're not recording or we're not live, we say things like, oh, hey, this is happening, but we can't mention it. But this was months and months ago. And it was a genuine case of where Kyle said to us, there's a thing that might be happening. And I even can't tell you guys about it, not to jinx it or even just so we don't let it slip. So it was a long time ago. And it was real hush hush, right? This was like a proper covert operation. Like you didn't even tell us.
We couldn't tell anyone. We couldn't even like if we were driving it on the street and we saw like someone coming up, we'd have to like move. We couldn't have anyone take photographs of the car. Really neat to drive such an early prototype. It was a great experience. Porsche was really good to us. Of course, I think we got them the largest Taycan story ever with the Cannonball. I think more articles were written about that than this launch. So that was pretty cool. And yeah, look, I'm a huge fan. I'd love to buy a Taycan. If I am going to buy a Taycan, it would be a Cross Turismo. But now we're getting a giant third dog and we kind of need an SUV. So yeah, otherwise I'd be getting one.
All right. So the Volvo XC40 Recharge was the first all-electric Volvo ever, and it just began production last fall. Now the company has just debuted the C40 Recharge. It is basically the same car, just a little less XC. That is, it's a little less of a traditional SUV crossover shape, or as we say, it's been coupified. So to refresh your memory, the XC40, or now the C40 Recharge, has a 78 kilowatt hour battery and has a WLTP range of about 261 miles or 420 kilometers. That's the same range as the more boxy XC40, which in the US has been given a EPA range rating of 208 miles, which is kind of disappointing. And hopefully we can see a better number for the C40. That's not many miles for a price tag in the 50K neighborhood, and this coupe version could cost even a bit more. Performance is said to be identical, a 0-60, 4.7 seconds, which is, of course, great. It charges to 80% in 40 minutes at a DC fast charger. So the big difference here comes down to headroom and cargo space and looks, of course. So here's the interesting part. Obviously, there will be less rear seat headroom. However, there's actually more headroom for front seat occupants, like 2.8 inches, if these, I'm reading these numbers right. The backseat passengers lose like 1.7 inches of headroom compared with the XC40. That's still not bad. That's less than an inch difference between the backseat of the C40 and the front seat of an XC40. So I have to imagine there's a bit less cargo space behind the rear seats, but Volvo hasn't released those figures. So throw it over to you guys. I know, Kyle, you love the coupes, right?
Oh, no, don't make me be negative on this. Look, I'm not a fan of automakers in general. I like to review individual cars. But if there is an entire brand that I do have to say, up until this point, I like every single thing they make, it would be Volvo. I am a huge Volvo fan. And this is just the most un-Volvo Volvo. Volvos have always been about practicality, giant bricks, making Swede speed. You know, it's all the fun Swedish stuff. That's super premium, not going out of its way to be sporty in any way. And that's what I appreciate about them. And now here they are taking a XC40, not doing any mechanical changes to it, and then just making it less practical, probably more expensive and way uglier. So just get an XC40 recharge, even though this might go 3 miles longer on a charge. Who cares? They're not efficient anyway. And Tom, do you have something nice to say about this car?
You know,
the XC40 on the screen we see there.
I don't see where it fits into their product line. You know, I don't see the where somebody coming to the dealership that's has an XC40 recharge and this sit next to it, and then they opt for this, unless it costs less, which you know it most likely isn't. And if it does, it wouldn't be much. I don't see how this fits in, Kyle. I kind of agree with what you're saying. It's a vehicle, I think, without a need. Volvo, at least here in the U.S., is going to have enough trouble with the XC40 recharge because it's a very poor value proposition. Look, the car drives great. I drove it. I thought it was an absolutely fantastic driving experience. I love the whole vehicle. But for Dom brought up a big point, you know, it's only 208 mile EPA range rating, but that's at 100% charge. And Volvo gives a very small battery buffer, kind of like what Tesla does. And so they recommend that you only charge it to 80% like Tesla does. So, you know, I'm sure the lessees aren't going to heed that warning, and they're going to the people that lease the vehicles are going to just keep charging it to 100%. But if let's say you buy one of these and you want to make sure your battery lasts long, so you heed their warning and you charge to 80%. Now you're talking about an EPA range rating like 180 miles ish, or less. And Dom said 50,000. Dom, it starts at 55.
In that neighborhood, because you're taking the tax credit.
But that's where it starts at, you know, and the most of these things are going to be equipped. They're going to be well into the 60s. So it's an expensive vehicle with not great range. I think that was the biggest problem that I had with it. If it was the same exact vehicle, okay, exact same vehicle, but it had an EPA range rating of 280 miles, it would be talking about a totally different thing here. And I know in the comments, we're going to get a lot of people saying, everybody doesn't need long range. And you're right. Everybody doesn't, but most people think they do. And Volvo, the people that are getting into this vehicle are going to be first time electric vehicle owners. For the most part, they're going to be coming out of another Volvo lease. They're going to be used to going 300 to 400 miles per gas fill. And then they're going to be told, look, you can go about half that far with this. I don't think it's going to do it. I so wanted to love the XC40 recharge, and I think Volvo just felt it's a great vehicle if you can live with the range. And where this new vehicle fits in next to it, it's going to be tough. I wouldn't want to be a Volvo salesperson having these two on my sales floor and have to try to explain to customers why you'd want this one over that one.
If you're 6'6", you might want the coupe because it has more headroom for the front passengers, you know?
That could be a selling point.
That's something, at least.
Yeah, you know, but look, I love the vehicles. I made my point. I think sure. Volvo's close. If they can make them more efficient, the thing, it only gets about 2 miles per kilowatt hour. It's one of the least efficient vehicles I've ever driven in. And that really hurts it.
JK, our viewer named JK Tesla, mentions that they made it to compete with the Audi e-tron Sportback. I think the Audi kind of edges it out, you know, value for money. But
yeah, anyway. Audi's bigger as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we need to move on real quick because we've got a bunch of stories we need to like at least hit on real quick. So sorry, C40, we're moving on, but we're not moving far. We're just going to your sub brand, Polestar, because they're opening 50 new stores in the U.S. this year, and those are Polestar spaces in the brand's parlance. The first one opens in Denver on the 30th of this month. Kyle, that's close to you, and I looked at.
Yeah, I guess building. I should go.
Yeah, I looked up the building on Google Maps. It's a nice little building. It's going to be a very sweet looking space. And then that's going to be followed by Austin and Boston, Austin, Texas, and Boston, Massachusetts. And that's early this in the spring. So then later on, before by June, we should also see Seattle, South Florida, Washington, D.C. And then Atlanta, Central and South New Jersey, Tom, Connecticut, Dallas, Detroit, Minneapolis, Phoenix, Orange County, California, coming in the second half of the year. So that's so far we've only had stores in like, I think there's one in like Santa Monica, South California. There's two in the Bay Area in California. And then there's Manhattan Motor Cars, I believe, in Manhattan. Yeah. So I don't know if we want to add anything to that. Anybody? Nope. Okay. So moving on real quick. So last week, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 officially launched, and we have a bit of news on that front. Apparently, it seems they have been received well, and there have been like 236,000 expressions of interest in Europe. That's like just hand raising. So those aren't firm orders, but still, that's a great response, I think, for a new car, you know. But in South Korea, they've gotten 23,760 actual pre-orders, and it's probably a little higher than that by now. So that's pretty cool. And what may be even cooler than this is that since the launch, there's been a bunch of sightings of the car and lots of videos. We have a number of videos on Inside EVs and, of course, the Inside EVs forum, where people are very excited about it. But one in particular got my attention, and that's the charging video. Did you see any of this, you guys? Charging at 149 kilowatts at 80% state of charge. Kyle, this is your next Cannonball record holder, I think.
Actually, probably not. That'll probably go to Lucid or Aptera. But I think this is a seriously good car. First off, the styling wins, I think, almost everyone over. This thing is like a Lancia Delta Integrale. It looks really cool, rally car style. I can't wait for the performance-y version of this, if they ever make one. The N, it would be called, I assume. Mm-hmm. And then, which has got to be the least sporty letter in the alphabet, by the way, N. So 149 kilowatts. Yeah, 150 kilowatt at 80% state of charge is massive. I mean, that just means it's going to do more below 180 kilowatts. So that is the lowest possible speed for the bulk charging of that pack, because it's never going to increase as state of charge goes up once you're past bottom voltage. And man, this thing looks great. It's going to charge like a monster. What is everyone else doing?
I don't know. Well, they need to be doing this.
Well, yeah, but you know, in fairness, and this is the interesting thing about the Bolt and the Bolt EUV, is that the manufacturers have been limited with battery technology. And not to get in the weeds about this, but you know, viewers that are maybe new to it or just want to learn more, look up the C rate of batteries, and something that the Porsche Taycan, the Audi e-tron have done with their 800 volt systems. They're like a C rate of around 3. In other words, it's to do with how fast you can charge and discharge a battery. And it's not purely down to the 800 volt system, but what it means is that the quicker you can charge a battery, the smaller you can put a battery in if there's a fast charging network out there. So on the condition that we have a good fast charging network,
fingers crossed, right? We know it's coming, and in many parts of the world, it's doing really well. It allows you to drive a 50 or 60 kilowatt hour battery car where you need to road trip a few times a year and have an all-purpose vehicle. That's what's so exciting about this this Hyundai, is that actually with a 60 kilowatt hour pack, with a, you know, with a very fast charging pack, incredibly fast charging pack, you're going to get 180, you know, kilowatt speeds on the small battery pack. So I would, you know, with very limited needs to do long distances, maybe a few times a year, I can carry around less weight. I can spend less money up front on buying the car. It's also good for the planet. You're not building a massive battery pack that you've got to haul down to get a pint of milk for no possible reason. And I'm with Kyle on this. It's really exciting to see Hyundai with the platform, not just them, but this, that they're going to build tens and tens of cars on across Kia and Genesis, nail this really fast charging speed, because I think it opens up the possibility, if it's a big if, we have a fast charging network, to have small battery cars that don't need to be stopped for very long on the occasional road trip. It's the holy grail, and that's why I'm excited about it.
Right. Totally agree. I think Tom and I have both been saying for years, we are not going to see a trend towards range. This is a short term while everyone's getting used to things. I think, like, I daily drive my little electric smart car around, or the little Archimoto I've been driving. Those have no range. I do 99% of my driving with a 50 mile EPA rated vehicle, you know, and I drive more than anyone I know. So I think it's so important that we get battery technology that allows for deep fast charging like this, that compensates for the need to get the longest range. I may not even get the longest range if I know I can charge fast deep in the pack. That is the main motivation that I personally would want to spec the highest battery, because the range isn't that important. It's all about the charging to me.
Absolutely. And to put this into perspective, 150 kilowatts or 149 kilowatts at 80% state of charge. The ID4 that I just did the charging test on was charging at 65 kilowatts when it hit 80% state of charge. So it just shows you how robust how robust of a charging system this Ioniq 5 has, where you get a much longer period of a super high charge rate. As I mentioned, the ID4 kept its 125, or actually a little bit higher, till 30% state of charge. So, you know, having this to charge at such high speeds for such a long period of time, all now we need, as Martin and Kyle said, is we need to fill in the charging stations all over the place. And, you know, you're talking about a 10 or 15 minute stop, maybe a 10 minute stop, to replenish 100, 150, 200 miles of range even. And that's really where we're at this, where we're at today with, where you're going to pull in and sit there for 45 minutes for a zero, for a 5 to 80%. That's not the future of electric cars. Right. The future of electric cars is having charging stations all over the place, not having 400 mile range in many instances, and just stopping for 10 minutes and you're in 150 miles and that's it. You unplug and you leave. You know, you plug the vehicle in. I know I've said this a bunch of times. You walk into the little shop where it's there. You use the facilities. You grab a cup of coffee. You come out and you unplug. You're not waiting for anything. It's charging while you're doing what you had to do anyway. Use the restroom, you know, grab a bite to eat. And then you come back out and you unplug and you move on. Once we're at that point, then the manufacturers can pull back and make smaller batteries, less range, because it's not this big long distance between charging stations when they're everywhere. And I don't think we're going to start really seeing that till the end of this decade. But I think around that point, the 2028 to 2030 area, I think that's when we're going to start to realize that, hey, you know, we don't need 500 mile range EVs.
That's a great great fortune telling. That's what I want. Anyway, in the next decade, we're gonna do that without the plugging in, inductive charging. You just pull up into the parking space to go in. I know people are shaking their heads now, Kyle, but I don't know.
The Hyundai engineers are deep in their blog somewhere. They did like a tech blog about the platform, which I'm sure, you know, it wouldn't have even been picked up by most people, but they talked about inductive charging in it. Firstly, they were really pleased with how they've done this was like last year when they blogged about the platform, and they were really pleased with how they've done the heating and cooling, really pleased with the inverter and how they use the motor in the car to manage that difference between 400 volts and 800 volts. If you're plugging into a 400 volt system, 150 kilowatt charger. You just get the maximum speed. There's no option to tick. But they were also really, really pleased with how they're future-proofing their cars. They talked about inductive charging. They look, we're working on this now. We don't know if we need to do it, right, but we're building this platform by thinking there are use cases of taxi ranks where people are, or bus, you know, depots where you just, the vehicle stopped for 5 minutes and then it moves on again. Where can we put inductive charging in? I don't think that actually doing that is that onerous to a car. Like,
no, it's not. It's
you know, and then unplugging. But there are you, and they, and it's so the engineers are thinking about stuff like this,
right?
I'm just thinking, have like, it in our garage at home.
I'm just thinking like 10 years ahead, or maybe more even. And you know, people say that it's more, it's inefficient. It's actually a lot more efficient than I think people realize. And but anyway, that's in the future. And so we'll just move on to the next story for now, because. Yeah, we're just a bit over time, but I really want to hit a couple of these things. So GM has realized that one Ultium battery factory just isn't going to cut it, so they're building another. General Motors and LG Solutions, via the Ultium Cells LLC joint venture, are exploring the feasibility of constructing a second state-of-the-art battery cell manufacturing plant in the United States, according to Dan Flores, a GM spokesperson. They hope to have a decision on the potential project in the first half of 2021. Right now, Spring Hill, Tennessee is the town where it's rumored to be sited. This will, again, be in partnership with LG. And speaking of LG, that's the South Korean battery company, in response to an inquiry from the Detroit Free Press, it said, to fulfill the EV battery demand in the U.S., LG Energy Solutions is also planning additional capacity expansion for other global manufacturers located in the U.S. as well. So look out for lots of LG Energy Solution battery factory in this country in the future. I thought that was kind of neat to point out. And while we're speaking about batteries in the future and American manufacturers, Rivian is rumored to be looking at developing a solid-state battery. They've published they're looking in the jobs. If you're looking for a job in developing solid-state battery, go to the jobs page on the Rivian site, and they are looking for some engineers. It's hard to say. I think they may be licensing some of this technology from somebody else, but it does look like they wanted to work with that company developing the technology and also the manufacturing line to build them. So also look for news of a Rivian, maybe a joint venture with another country, a battery manufacturing site.
And also, by the way, also this week, Henrik Fisker came out and said solid state, not for Fisker, because right. For a time, I really rate Fisker, both Henrik as a designer, but also for what they're doing, which is very much like they're, if anything, that's the Apple car, because the way that you know, Apple design stuff and then Foxconn make it. If anything, Fisker is the Apple car because they've got a great design. The Ocean looks brilliant. But for a time, they got all a bit Nikola with us because they were saying, oh, we're almost there with solid state batteries. It's going to be a magical pick. Sexy fairy dust. And Henrik came out this week. And I just think the statements they're making are just more, right. I mean, they're a public company now, more realistic. And he was like, look, right. that's not on our roadmap. The first 90% is relatively easy. The last 10% of solid state is fabulously hard. Not for right. us.
Right. They had said that, you know, it was coming. They had a Fisker solid state battery, and their partner in that venture, actually, there's a lawsuit that was going on. I'm not sure if it's resolved yet, but
I haven't seen that. Yeah.
Before, until recently, if you Google the right words, you can find out some history on that lawsuit. And it's kind of interesting reading. But anyway, back to Rivian real quick. So Rivian published a number of photos on its site under its blog page. What do they call that? Under a site called Cold Weather Testing, the stories section, right? Stories.rivian.com, Cold Weather Testing. And one of them appears to show a slightly different version of the R1T pickup truck. This one, it still has like a rear back seat and a rear door on the passenger side, at least, but it's smaller than the door on the trucks we've seen. So it could be that there is a... It could be that this is a king cab kind of version of the R1T pickup truck that they're working on. And they don't usually leak these things. So if it is a thing that's happening, we expect to see it soon. It'd be interesting to see if there's a door on the other side as well that mirrors this one. And as well, if it has a longer bed, which is something that Kyle has his dog with him. That's great.
Hello. Oh, they got
both the dogs. Awesome.
All the dogs are there.
Right. Anyway, Ellie and Blue's here, and they're freaking out because the Foster is outside with Alyssa.
Oh, awesome. Hey, so Kyle, would you like a longer bed at the expense of some backseat room?
No, I don't think a pickup truck works for me. I need a full SUV because these guys I can't put in the bed without them flying out every time we take a corner, and that right. would just get expensive and bloody.
Dogs are pretty good in the back pickup trucks originally, but it's not really something that people should do.
No, absolutely not. I'd see that. I'm just not a fan of putting dogs in the back of a truck, right. especially in the case of an accident. Alyssa right. has a statistic she shares every time we see one. Do you right. know that 12,000 dogs die a year? Something like this. Man. But yeah, oh, SUV terrible. All the way for us.
Right. Yeah. Down here in the south of the States, a lot of people hunt with dogs, and they do have dogs in the back. But often, but they're in.
But they have crates. Crazy.
Yeah, they have crates fine. Manufactured specifically for that, so there's a safety factor there. Okay, and so moving on real quick, I just want to mention that the Mach-E customers have there's been a few that have been experiencing some delays getting their vehicles, approximately 4,500, and that includes 1,500 who have already received their Mustang Mach-E. So Ford is going to give them some. 250 kilowatt hours of complimentary charging on the Ford Pass charging network, and 150 customers, it's very special customers, also get $1,000 off their purchase of the Mustang Mach-E. So that's something. And they say that the delay was due to quality checks. That's interesting. Let's just end with this picture of the Volkswagen. They've teased a electric ID.3 Cabriolet, which I got excited about because I want to see a cabriolet or a convertible electric vehicle at some time. And Volkswagen wants you to let them know if you're interested in buying this. So please log on to Twitter or Volkswagen, Facebook, or whatever platform and let them know that, you know, this coupe convertible thing catches your eye. Right. So anyone want to bring up anything real quick about that?
It's really special to drive an electric convertible. Really neat. There's been two, I think, for sale in the history of the U.S. One is the Smart Electric. The other is the Tesla Roadster, the original. I don't think there have been any others. I don't think any of the Fiat 500Es ever were sold as a convertible here. And I own one. I own an electric Smart convertible, and it is a surreal experience driving around in silence, listening to nature with right. the top down. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Right. Awesome. Okay, that brings us to the end of our show. Thank you all for joining us. If you have any comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post, the YouTube comment section, or on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter and tell them how you feel about them pulling into Tesla superchargers with a non-Tesla vehicle. right. Tom Logney is at Tomalog, Martin Lee is at AV News Daily, Kyle Connor is at Out of Spec, and I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
O'Reilly. Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today. O'Reilly.